It is our mission here to rigorously and ruthlessly train the humanity out of you and make you into something better. We're going to make doctors out of you.
Well, I just believe there's more to being a doctor than memorizing facts about the ventricular arteries.
I don't care what you think. I care about my biology test.
We're not even going to see a patient until the third year.
If you want to become a doctor, we have to learn to treat the patient as well as the disease. That's why we have to dive into people.
You have a brilliant mind, and like many brilliant people, you don't necessarily think the rules apply to you.
It was so much more convenient thinking of you as an idiot.
That little ice that just chipped off.
If you want to be a clown, go join the circus.
For your own sake, I think you should just lay low for a while.
The hospital will cover all of your bills. Any other questions?
Patients are opening up to me, Corinne. They're sharing their dreams, their fantasies. They don't concentrate on the pain.
I'm warning you, stay out of this hospital.
What if a doctor becomes emotionally involved with a patient? What is wrong with that?
Patients don't need a friend. They need a doctor.
My name is Dr. Phil. I'll be your surgeon. Oh, there you are.
You are dismissed.
Sir.
From this school.
They can't prevent me from graduating because of a personality clash, can they?
Universal Pictures presents...
You are not cut out to be a physician.
Our job is improving the quality of life, not just delaying death.
The true story of a man who broke every rule.
Why am I such a threat to you, sir?
Because what you want is for us to get down there on the same level as our patients.
And prove that laughter...
Donner, party of 50. Donner, party over here.
...truly is the best medicine.
Close, leap!
Robin Williams.
You treat a disease, you win, you lose. You treat a person, I guarantee you'll win, no matter what the outcome.
Patch Adams.
And welcome once again to another episode of the SweetFeatheryJesus.com podcast. I'm your host, Belasco, the admin of SweetFeatheryJesus.com. With me, as always, is Booze from London, England. Hey, Booze.
How you doing? What?
All right. And Dr. P coming at you.
Howdy,
from the
fella.
East Coast here in the United States. We have a special guest tonight. Want to welcome Casey Ryan from the Cutting Room Floor podcast. Casey, how are you doing?
I'm doing great, thanks. How about you, Belasco?
Doing really, really good. Why don't you tell them a little bit about your show and what you do?
Yeah, basically what I do is I have a half-hour podcast on the weekends that's dedicated to showcasing independent and micro-budget filmmakers, just helping them try to get their word out there and occasionally raise money to make sure that they get the funding that they need. So
nice. And your podcast is Cutting Room Floor, is that right?
Cutting Room Floor, yeah.
Cool. Excellent. All right, and I have to say, this episode is basically the brainchild of Casey, and we have Casey to thank for putting us through a Robin Williams version of hell.
Yeah,
oh, right, right out of the gate, eh, guys?
Yes. Thanks a lot, mate.
Throw the Canadian under the bus right out of the gate.
Well, you don't know our history with Canadians, so you don't really...
Yeah, long-standing feud.
I'm fine with him until now.
So the works of Robin Williams, and you know, I didn't know when I first started looking into this. I did not realize just how many movies he's been in. I believe the filmography on Wikipedia is like over 70 movies.
Really?
Bloody he's hell. Been a part of, and I haven't even seen half of them.
Yeah, when we set up the vote, we missed a lot out. And there were some people on Twitter that actually nominated some that weren't on the actual on the vote when we first set it up.
Yeah.
And me and Belasco actually watched a couple of those for some reason.
Oh.
Which we'll talk about later.
That was rough.
Yeah, I was just asking why. Why would you do that? Why would you watch more Robin Williams than you had to?
First of all, I'm going to be
doing a podcast on it.
Yeah, that's one reason. But you know what? I'm going to honestly say, and you know, I'm going to throw myself under the bus here. I'm kind of a fan.
What?
I like the guy.
You like
what, even now?
Okay, you know, can I propose a theory just to start off with? And I was thinking about this. There was one film critic that I like named John Moore who had a theory that the movies that Robin Williams made where he had a full beard were a lot better than the ones that he made when he was clean.
Well, I can answer that. I know why that is. It's because you can't see his ridiculously pointy chin.
And nose,
yeah. He's like the man in the moon. And the older he gets, the worse it gets. And when he gets to about, I don't know, 80, they're going to meet.
If we go back and we start at like the beginning, his first major film role, at least according to Wikipedia, was Popeye in 1980.
Yeah.
Which I remember seeing in the theater.
I didn't see it, but 1980, I would have been 7 years old. I really, really wanted to see that film, I remember. I know a lot of people at my school saw it, and they were talking about it. And well, I guess I had a lucky escape, did I?
Yes, you did.
Right.
What am I? I'm Papa, the sailor. And I am what I am, what I am, and I am what I am, and that's all that I am, because I am what I am. You got it? I think so, yeah.
And Altman has made some fantastic films. What the hell was he thinking?
He was probably out of his mind on drugs at that point. I would have thought cocaine would have been the main reason that that film was made and you know, why it was as bad as it was.
Oh,
I personally think it was a case of the wrong guy for the job, to be honest with you. And I mean, you've seen examples of this, you know, slightly more modern ones. What was Ang Lee doing directing Hulk?
I mean, I think you're right. So, Casey, do we want to discuss any of Robin Williams' actually good films?
Well, the only one that you guys had on your list or your hit list there that I could actually defend was
Good Morning Vietnam!
I actually enjoyed that one.
Yeah, I was surprised that one was on our list, too. Booze created the poll, and I was like, wow, Booze didn't like Good Morning Vietnam.
Well, I'll tell you this. I haven't seen it since it came out, at least on video anyway. So we're talking, what year was that, 87?
Yeah.
So I probably haven't seen it for over 20 years. And I think it was a Barry Levinson film, right?
It was.
Yeah, right? It was.
And so was Man of the Year. So yep. Was Toys. I've just got a feeling, and I kind of remember, that it might have been a little bit misjudged in places. Like, had a little bit of a MASH element. You know, where mm-hmm. It's all comedy, comedy, comedy.
Time to rocket from the Delta to the DMZ.
It's O600. What's the O stand for?
Oh, my God.
It's Mr. Leo.
You know, this whole camouflage thing for me doesn't work very well. Why is that? Well, because you're going to jungle, I can't see you. If you're going to fight, clash.
And then a Vietnamese kid gets his legs blown off, and then it gets serious for 5 minutes with strings playing over the top of it. And then back to the comedy.
There is always a Robin Williams joke montage in the film.
Yeah. Improved, by all accounts, and none of it is funny. It's only in the delivery. and I might have laughed at Robin Williams' stand-up, you know, when I was 12 or something like that, maybe.
But when I was in junior high,
doesn't actually say anything funny.
It killed me when I was in junior high.
Really?
I loved it when I was in junior high.
Right.
I think that when he does hit well, he hits really well. The two that come to mind that I really enjoyed were probably Awakenings and, of course, Good Will Hunting. But I think that of all of his movies that I enjoyed the most, Awakenings probably would have been the best one.
I got to ask, am I the only one that liked The World According to Garp?
Been a long time since I saw that one.
No, I could defend that one, too.
Okay.
That was ahead of its time, I think. But,
yeah.
I that had its moments as well.
It did. It's just, it's one of those. It does have its sappy moments, but I did enjoy it.
I was kind of a fan of Robin Williams before we did this, because I avoided all of those films that I knew that I wouldn't like Patch Adams, like Bicentennial Man. You know, I could go on and on and on. So I've only seen the ones that I thought he might be good in. You know, like your 1 Hour Photo and Insomnia and
right.
The Fisher King, which is my favorite. And I didn't realize how much bad stuff he'd done. And now I can't be a fan of him because...
Well, and how bad it is.
Closer to the mic, Pete.
and how bad it is. A bad Robin Williams movie is just torturous. I mean, Patch Adams, I guess we've all just recently watched that one, correct? That may be the most formulaic movie I've ever seen in my life.
But this is a biopic about a bloke that I didn't know anything about before I saw it. I didn't even know he was a real person until I watched this film and saw
IMDb. This is based on a true story.
Oh, God. Apparently, the real Patch Adams hated it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, he did.
He was right, wasn't he?
One of the things that my dad and I always did, that was our thing. We would go to movies. My dad and I were always going to movies and stuff. And one day,
you weren't taking the football team to see Mandinga.
No, that was my stepdad. No, my dad and I, it's completely different. Although, he has never let me live down the time he asked me, well, what do you want to go to the movies and see? And I said, Cadillac Man.
Benz. 300E Benz.
Joey O'Brien loves to sell cars.
Mercedes Benz.
How old were you?
Okay, I prepared for this, and I got, you know, the one good thing about Cadillac Man was that it was full of really good swear words. And one of the lines in here, I wrote it down, is... he was basically acting like an ass half because it would take two of them to make an asshole.
Give him that. That's some decent writing for once in Robin Williams film.
Sure. There's occasionally something, but my dad despises that movie to this day. To this day, whenever we go to see a movie he doesn't know anything about, he asks me, this isn't going to be another Cadillac Man, is it? Every time.
What was the one you were talking about, Casey, with... Is Kurt Russell in it as well?
Oh, The Best of Times. Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen that. I saw that when it came out, but I can't remember a thing about it.
I remember renting that when I was much younger, of course, and I remember that being painfully bad to watch. And for some reason, my parents just decided that they were going to sit through it from start to finish, and I sat there with them and got through the whole thing. But I just remember it being... awful beyond all recognition.
Do you mind telling us your age, Casey?
I'm 35.
35, okay. I'm 35 as well.
I'm 38. Dr. P's 56, AFP.
Yeah, pretty close.
Closer to the mic, P.
P, where do you go?
I don't go anywhere.
It comes every time you talk, I can't hear.
Yeah, every time you speak, it sounds like you're 5 feet away from the mic.
In another room, sitting on the toilet.
But yeah, I didn't see The Best of Times until it was on HBO, and I guess we're all around the same age. I kind of like, but I haven't seen it recently. I haven't sat through it recently, so I can't say for sure that it's a bit, but I liked it when I was younger.
I forget which one of you argued you liked the Star Wars Christmas special when you were younger. I mean,
I said I liked
just complete shit.
I said I liked Return of the Jedi.
You're insane, P. No one has ever said in the history of Earth that they liked the Star Wars Christmas special.
Okay, maybe you didn't say you liked it, but you were kind of defending the little Ewoks or something. I mean,
I think George Lucas liked it because that's what he based the Phantom Menace on. Isn't
yeah,
it?
You're right.
Nobody in the history of Earth has ever said they liked the Ewoks.
I'm getting away from my original point. You can like some really, really crappy movies when you're a kid. You don't have very refined taste. It entertains you. You stare at it. Action happens. It's good. You know. I mean, that's.
True.
Which is why Old Dogs got made, I guess. I don't know what age they were aiming that at. Oh, you haven't seen it, and
don't.
Casey, have you seen Old Dogs?
No, I refuse to.
Yeah, well, you're right.
I wish I had.
You know, there's some lines you just don't cross, and that's why.
Yeah, right, but I didn't realize. I wanted to watch it because I knew we were going to give Robin Williams a monumental slagging off, and I wondered whether he deserved it. Maybe he changed his tune. This was the last film he made, apart from Happy Feet 3D or some bollocks. And it's the worst one he's ever made. Don't you think?
I heard that.
Yeah. Belasco, back me up on this.
Old Dogs is horrible.
It doesn't make sense on any level. It's like horrible. One of those films that they've remade from a French film, you know, and it's badly translated or something. I don't know what they're trying to do.
Robin Williams and John Travolta are lifelong friends. They own a business together in sports marketing. How vague is that? How vague is sports marketing? And
Have you not read Sports Marketing Monthly?
No.
The industry magazine.
Multi-billion dollar business, right?
Yeah. And they're in the middle of the biggest deal of their lives. Robin Williams finds out that
stereotypical Japanese people. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, the most stereotypical Japanese people. Oh my God. Yeah, with the Japanese. He finds out that due to a little fling he had in South Beach that John Travolta made him go on after his divorce, he actually has kids that he didn't know about. They're 7 years old now.
You paid much more attention to the plot than I did, if you can recount that.
Fraternal twins, a boy and a girl. Perfect for Hollywood.
I thought you were saying he had just basically knocked up all of Jamaica or something. That was going to be pretty funny.
And the girl is actually played by John Travolta's real-life daughter.
I didn't realize that.
Oh, yeah.
I heard that someplace, too, yeah.
And she's actually, you know, like, the camera quite likes her. I don't know who was pulling the strings to get the boy twin the role.
I don't know either. But
because he looks like a mutant.
I did notice that the woman that Robin Williams had fathered the children with was actually John Travolta's wife, Kelly Preston.
I didn't know that.
Yes.
Okay. And there was a great bit in it. Like, it's such a convoluted plot. It's, you know, it's not even worth recounting. But she has to go to jail. Right, and the reason she gives having to go to prison is that she was on an environmental protest, and she got a bit het up about someone poisoning a lake, and she got arrested for trespass. Which is, do you remember Max Cady when he was trying to pull Nick Nolte's secretary in Cape Fear?
Oh God! You
know, he was on a protest, and some cop was messing with some ladies, so he popped in one, and he got put away for it. And then he bites Ileana Douglas's face off.
By the end of the movie, I wish she was going to jail for strapping her kids into a van and backing it into a lake. You know, it was just like, God, make this end.
It was amazing. And Rita Wilson, is it Wilson?
Yes.
Tom Hanks' missus.
Yes.
Plays a bug-eyed hand model.
She's cross-eyed through the whole movie.
Yeah. Now, that's not very nice, is it, to people who share that affliction?
Oh.
And she gets her hands trapped. She's going to be the one who looks after the kids while the mum's in prison. But Robin Williams, the silly klutz, he shuts her fingers in the trunk of the car.
Right. And they could not establish enough that she is a hand model. Yeah. A hand model.
That's awesome.
A hand model.
That scene went on for about 5 minutes.
A hand model.
And they played Big Girls Don't Cry while she went all bus-eyed and had her fingers trapped in the boot of the car.
Oh, Casey, it's despicable. It's a despicable film.
And it sounds better than Patch Adams.
Yeah, and exactly. You know, Patch Adams is still worse, according to the vote.
But it
was a Disney film too, wasn't it?
It was a Disney film. Yeah, but it can't have been aimed at kids because there's two scenes in which people take very, very strong drugs.
Yes,
and it fucks them up. Uh-huh. Big time, with hilarious consequences, of course. Well, not really, but intended.
Allegedly.
It makes their mouths go like the Joker out of the Tim Burton, the first Batman film.
Because you can always tell in these Disney films that there's going to be what I call the comedy set piece.
Mm.
The first one was Robin Williams getting a spray-on tan.
Yeah, the tanning booth scene. Now, I'm glad you brought this up, Velasco, because it's not so much the fact that this happened and it was long and drawn out. For Dr. P and Casey, he went to get a tan because he was going to go and meet this chick that he'd, you know, impregnated without his knowledge 7 years ago. So he wanted to look nice. So Travolta takes him to a tanning salon and he gets a spray tan. Mm-hmm. But it's too strong and it doesn't shut off and he...
Emergency
newbies.
Keep the heat medium low and throw a little bit of butter.
What do you know? He turns out to be, you know, like an Indian.
So right? he had a spray tanning mishap.
Yes,
a spray tanning mishap. The spray tanning mishap scene. Yeah, the famous mishap scene from Old Dogs. And so he goes on the date, right? And but then, obviously, you know, you don't want to see him with a tan for the whole film because that would be funny. It's like 40 minutes later, he's still got the same ridiculous tan. So she just says to him,
"What do you say we get rid of that ridiculous tan? I know a few family secrets."
"You don't like it?"
"Oh, I'm sorry. Do you like it?"
"Not at all."
"Okay."
Oh, yeah, by the way, I know some old family remedies would get rid of that. Next scene, 5 minutes later, he's taking the kids to the park. And he just looks completely normal as he did before.
So, wait, first off, there's a home remedy to get a fake spray tan off of yourself?
Apparently so.
That might exist. I don't know. I can't say.
A home remedy.
Yeah, like, I think it's called bleach.
It's been around for ages. Yeah.
I will say to you, Dr. P, guess who makes an appearance in the movie?
Oh, the chick from Twilight.
No.
Who?
Anne Margaret.
Oh, nice.
Oh, God.
Of course, she might have been old by then. So
yes, she was, because it was just made a couple of years ago.
It's an unfortunate titled film for her to be in at that point.
And if you want to talk about formulaic, they established very early on in Old Dogs that Robin Williams, his character, doesn't do well with kids. He doesn't like kids. He doesn't want kids. And, of course, by the end of the film...
He's the perfect dad.
He's the perfect dad. He loves kids. Thank you, Hollywood, for giving us another film that we didn't need to see.
Yeah.
Of a guy learning. I took from it the moral of the movie, always wear a condom. Oh.
It was a good review on Rotten Tomatoes from an English newspaper that said, you know, this is a watershed in Travolta's career, Old Dogs, because he's finally made a film that's worse than Battlefield Earth.
Huh. Actually, you know what? I'll volunteer this. I accidentally, on purpose, passed up a chance as an extra in Battlefield Earth. It was shot up here. A friend of mine was going because they were auditioning people to be extras that were over 6 feet tall, and he was trying to talk me into going with them. And I said, "Nah, you know, I just don't feel like it." You know, it turned out it was Battlefield Earth. So, you know,
it could have been on your CV, though, couldn't it?
Wow.
Would you have got to keep all the prosthetic, I don't know, noses or whatever they stuck on them?
Any regrets about that?
Not in the slightest. I think of a lot of other movies I wanted to be extras in that were shot up here, but Battlefield Earth isn't one of them. That's one of the things I don't mind having, not on my resume. So
I would kind of regret it just because of the – just to be able to have that story.
Yeah, the stink factor.
Yeah. But then again, I like really bad movies too, so –
What have you seen? Have you seen Bicentennial Man, Casey?
Yes, I have. Yeah.
You're right. Now, should we move on to that?
I'd like to watch that one again because the first time I saw it, I did kind of enjoy it. But then again, I'm an Oliver Platt fan, so I thought he did a good job in that. But I can understand why people would think that that's really corny, too. So.
Andrew, this is very good.
Thank you, sir.
Don't you think?
I think it sucks.
Sucks? How? Chickens do not have lips.
I felt, when I watched it, I felt like a bicentennial had passed when it was over.
It was long.
I actually quite enjoyed the first half of it. I enjoyed most of it until Robin Williams' personality started to come through the robot. And that ruined it for me.
Yeah, and you know what? I remember thinking that too. That was where it kind of got a little bit weak. The more human that he got, the less interesting he got.
It felt like an eternity watching it.
Well, it's just like, you know, let the other goddamn shoe drop and let's move on, kind of.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, as we move on through, he's done a lot of supporting roles. He did a supporting role in Tu Wong Fu. He did a supporting role in 9 Months as the doctor that delivers the baby.
You know.
And then I think he hit maximum popularity at Aladdin.
I think I have seen that, or some of it anyway.
Yes.
And I think I was kind of looking forward to seeing it because everyone said, you got to watch this because Robin Williams is so funny in it. And that might have been the point at which I fell out with kids' films.
That one goes to prove even in an animated film, you will get a Robin Williams joke montage.
Yeah, well, no, you get more than one in that one.
Wow.
Just sort of a rehash of all of his old comedy routines. Mm-hmm. Right?
I would like to issue a challenge now to anyone listening to this. Find me one joke in any of these films is actually funny.
Will take that challenge.
All right.
I seem to remember an exchange between J.T. Walsh and Robin Williams and Bruno Kirby that took place in Good Morning Vietnam that I laughed at pretty hard.
Yeah, but I'm talking about in something like Old Dogs or Patch Adams. Nothing was funny in that.
I mean specifically when he's doing that obvious, right, Robin Williams is going to do some of his material now. Everyone stand back and let him go.
Okay.
You know? Because he does that in pretty much every film, right? So he does that kind of like generic, I'm kind of a black man, kind of from New Orleans, you know, like very much like John Travolta does. Sometimes.
You didn't find him convincing in Mrs. Doubtfire?
Oh, God. And he busted that accent out again in Death to Smoochie. You know? There was a point in Death to Smoochie where... Can we get into it, Death to Smoochie?
Sure.
Have we all seen that one?
Oh.
P? Have you ever seen this?
Get closer to the mic and tell us if you've seen Death for Smoochie.
No, of course I've not seen Death for Smoochie.
All right, well...
I tried to watch that twice and fell asleep both times.
All right. I actually thought the first third of Death to Smoochie was pretty good because it's a well-directed film. It's Danny DeVito.
Right.
And he knows what he's doing. And, you know, it's fast-paced. You've got some nice transitions going on.
Get you off that smackle, yes we will. Oh, we'll get you off that smackle, yes we will. Oh, we're gonna get you off that smack. We'll kick that monkey right off your back and get your life on track. Oh, yes we will.
But when the story kicks in, and when Robin Williams kicks in, it all goes to shit. But, there's a bit in it. Robin Williams plays, the top-rated kids' TV personality, and then he gets deposed because he's some scandals going on, and then they get Smoochie on, Ed Norton, and Robin Williams plays for the rest of the film, tries to take him down.
Do you have any idea the power of a condemned man? Do you?
Yeah.
The most convoluted, ridiculous ways possible, like taking him to a Nazi rally in disguise.
See, that made me laugh.
Yeah, but come on. I mean, look, you know when they're having a script meeting, they go, no, it's all right, we can do the Nazis because it's been done before. They did it in the Blues Brothers.
Right.
You know, it's broad comedy, it'll work. It doesn't work, it's shit. And Robin Williams has to do a Scottish accent on the phone to trick him into getting into the car.
Hello, Mr. Mooks?
Yeah?
My name is Benjamin McNucklepick. I'm calling on behalf of Parents for Decency and Children's Television. Perhaps you've heard of us.
Which is then driven by Robin Williams, who has been one of the most famous people on television, especially for a smoochie, and that's, you know, you're into kids' TV. And he doesn't recognise him because he's got a beard on. This completely blows your theory out of the water, Casey, by the way. Beards. And,
that's right. He does appear in a beard in Death of Smoochie.
Yeah, briefly.
Yeah, fake beard, though.
Well, yeah, fair enough. I'll give it that.
There's that caveat right there.
So he's done the Scottish accent on the phone. When he gets in the car, I thought he was doing an Australian accent. I thought he was pretending to be someone else yet again.
I really want to thank you for picking me up like this.
No worries, Mr. Mopes. Chance to have Smoochie the Rhino perform without a little soiree. I'd stick my Willie in a nest of funnel whips if I had to.
Well, that sounds a little extreme. Why don't you just try it, please?
You're funny.
Until, you know, we were about 2-3 minutes into it, and I thought, oh, no, hang on, he's doing Scottish. His accents are horrible. They're fucking awful, and he does them all the time. Another challenge. Find me a Robin Williams film that's supposed to be funny in some way where he doesn't do an accent. You know, he breaks into that accent when he does his little comedy piece.
All right.
Improv. Okay, well, this would be as good a time as any to bring up Jacob the Liar, because he spends the whole time doing a bad accent. That.
Hitler goes to a fortune teller and asks, when will I die? And the fortune teller replies, on a Jewish holiday. Hitler then asks, how do you know that? And she replies, any day you die will be a Jewish holiday.
Oh, my God.
I don't know if I've seen that.
I had every intention of watching that today, and I just couldn't bring myself to do it. I've seen like 8 Robin Williams films in the past 3 days.
Yeah, me too.
And a couple last week as well.
Didn't Jacob the Liar come out around the same time as Life is Beautiful?
Yes.
Yeah. And one was done very well, and the other one was done very poorly.
Tell us about Jacob the Liar, Casey.
Jacob the Liar was a remake of, from my understanding, a movie by Armin Mueller-Stahl, who is a great actor from Europe, and about this guy that was trying to inject levity into a bunch of people who were about to get shipped off to a concentration camp by sort of making funny voices through a radio, what I remember. Feel-good film.
Feel-good film. The Holocaust always makes for feel-good films.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, it came across more along the lines of a bad routine from the Catskills, and it was just overdone and weak on so many different levels. I just couldn't believe it. I actually saw that one in the theaters, I remember, and somebody came up to Williams after and asked him about all the negative press that he was getting about that movie, and he turned around and told her to fuck off. I think that was the best part of Jacob the Liar.
That makes me feel a little bit better for doing this because, you know, it cuts both ways.
One of the things I thought could have improved Death to Smoochie is if it had gone a little bit darker, which I know it was pretty dark to begin with. It was a dark comedy in general.
Yeah.
If it had gone a bit darker and it had been directed by someone like Bob Goldthwait.
Well, it seemed like it was trying to be that, didn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. I think...
But, there were cartoon characters in it, like the Irish mob family and all that kind of thing. They were too broad.
Hey, don't go anywhere, Smoochie! I'll be right back after I take a dump!
And, of course, you had the Catherine Keener love story, which just turned on a sixpence, or on a dime, as I guess you would say over there. And she hates him. Oh, no, she loves him, you know.
I don't think Robin Williams would ever agree to be in a Shakes the Clown type movie, though.
I actually think he's done it, though.
He was in that, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was in Shakes the Clown.
There you go.
Jesus Christ.
And he did...
he wasn't in that.
What was it? The World's Greatest Dad?
Well, that's obviously the worst.
Well, The World's Greatest Dad, you know, that was a bit of a misfire, but there were some very... deep moments to that.
I thought there were some excellent moments in that. Overall, for a mediocre movie, but I have to say, I kind of enjoyed World's Greatest Dad.
I really liked it. I thought there were a couple of bits that didn't work, and it's a Bobcat film, so you know he gets a pass just because of the whole Windy City Heat thing. For me, he can do what he wants now. It's made the greatest film ever made. And we're contractually obliged to mention it in every podcast, so we've done it now. Anyway,
okay, so Bobcat Goldthwait was in Shakes the Clown, but...
He was. He also directed it, didn't he?
He directed it, and that was Robin Williams who was in that, I believe.
I know, I see that, but he was an extra called Mime Jerry. He didn't... I'm looking at all these pics from it. He wasn't like a star of it. Okay, but the dumbest thing I ever said was he would have never been in Shakes the Clown.
You okay? Oh, I'm kind of fucked up in general, so it's hard to gauge.
I don't know if it's the dumbest thing you've ever said, but
no,
it's
he
good.
Did drag
no, it really isn't the dumbest thing you've ever said. Yeah.
Did any of you watch What Dreams May Come?
Yes.
Yeah. I've seen that one a few times. Yeah.
Now, this was it. Someone. It was Jenny Shrinks. Jenny Shrinks on Twitter, and she tried to organise like a late rally, where she was trying to get her followers to vote for that, so we would have to watch it. And you know, the joke's on us because me and Belasco watched it.
Yeah.
And but at the point we watched it, I mean, the start of it is, it's amazingly depressing.
Yeah.
Hey, you would have loved this.
Yeah.
His kids don't get, what, like 2-3 minutes of screen time before they're stuck in a box and put in the ground?
Yep.
And even that is too much, really, because they're annoying.
Send them on in their minivan of death.
Yeah. And then 5 minutes later, Robin Williams is getting taken out as well. And
trying to help somebody during a car accident or something like that.
Yeah, which made it even funnier. And I was just thinking, oh, yeah, man. But by that point, he put me through so much misery, I wanted him to go through some himself. So I enjoyed that. That was good. But the rest of it was, oh, Jesus Christ. It's very hard, I guess, to depict heaven on screen, especially when this film was made. When was this made?
98.
Okay.
It was right before Bicentennial Man.
Right. Well, the whole film looks like Heaven looks like a Sunday supplement magazine from 95, I would say.
I was thinking it was a Thomas Kincaid painting.
Yeah, I was just going to say it looked more like a painting. Yeah, they rely heavily on the oil painting thing.
Right. Thomas Kincaid, the painter of light.
Oh, God. Oh. Cuba Gooding Jr., though, what happened to that? I mean, I never thought he was a good actor anyway. I never thought that.
No, not especially.
Not even in Jerry Maguire, which he won the Oscar for?
Academy Award winner, but no.
There's a scene. What that did for him, though. I mean, you know, what did he do really of note after that was all?
Well, Snow Dogs.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, he did Snow Dogs. The only other film where he gave a halfway decent appearance was As Good As It Gets, and he wasn't in that very much.
Do you think it was a conscious decision on his part to, right, I've won the Oscar, now I'm going to do some comedy, a bit like Robin Williams, really. I'm going to go with Spooner's theory about Lou Gossett Jr., that someone in Hollywood hates Cuba Gooding Jr. Maybe it's everyone who's got Jr. in their name gets run out of town.
Booze, you issued the challenge.
Oh,
A funny joke from a Robin Williams movie.
Yeah.
I have to say, when he was in the mental institution in Patch Adams.
Oh, God.
Oh, God.
The scene where they're doing the group therapy, and you've got the catatonic dude with his arm in the air.
Mm-hmm.
And he was making jokes about the guy raising his hand.
Yep.
Yes.
That made me laugh.
Hey, Beanie, how do you check an elephant for a hernia? Beanie, who would win a staring contest? Beanie!
Who fought it?
Beanie!
I thought that was
funny.
Dude,
that was not funny.
Especially the one where he says, who likes to masturbate? And they all, I laughed at that.
You've been on SFJ too long, man.
I may have been. I may have been, but I thought that was a funny scene.
Wow, I didn't.
Because it's making fun of the mentally ill.
Yeah, it is, but then it... no, I'm not having that.
I didn't laugh. I was stone-faced through the whole thing.
I'm not against making fun of the mentally ill, but you can do it better than that.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, yeah, we've probably done it better than that with Blind Lawrence, but still.
Yeah.
Allow me to quote. Can I share a quote with you? Because this is from the review that Roger Ebert wrote about Patch Adams.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
He said, it's not merely a tear jerker. It extracts tears individually by liposuction without anesthesia. Pretty much sums it up as far as I'm concerned.
That really does.
He's often spot on in some of these reviews. I've referred to him on a couple of the podcasts.
I think that one of the other things that really bugged me, too, is that you had Philip Seymour Hoffman in there. From what I remember just doing his typical, hipster egghead doofus routine that he does in almost every single one of his films.
Yeah, I want to nominate Philip Seymour Hoffman as another example of the Pete Postlethwaite conundrum in what the hell accent was he doing?
I didn't even notice it, so...
It's not Southern.
I didn't even notice it either, to be honest.
You know, Mrs. Kennedy in 212, she doesn't eat. I visited her room every day for the last 3 weeks. I can't get her to eat. I know everything there is to know about medicine. I've studied relentlessly.
Yeah, it didn't stand out to me, so But did you notice in that film, every character was either very good and pure or just a real selfish bastard that was...
Oh, yeah.
There were no shades of gray. Everyone,
no.
And you knew right away. Hell, that Dean, he looked like just a prick. I mean,
he got his come up and say, didn't he?
Do you want to tell me what it is you think you're doing?
Just getting a few laughs, sir. And the American Journal of Medicine has found that laughter increases secretion of catecholamines and endorphins, which in turn increases oxygenation of the blood, relaxes the arteries, speeds up the heart, decreases blood pressure, which has a positive effect on all cardiovascular and respiratory ailments, as well as overall increasing the immune system response.
Oh, yeah.
The chairman of the committee. Well, Dean, stop being such a...
I think they should have just gone all out because it was the same guy that played the warden in Shawshank Redemption. They should have took him out the same way.
Typecast.
I would have liked the movie better. That's for sure.
Right, I forgot Bob Gunton was in that too.
There was another line in Patch Adams that made me laugh, Booze, just to take up your challenge.
Hmm.
Let's check out the maternity ward. You know those chicks put out.
Dude, that was so not funny. That was so forced.
I found it in bad taste.
No, it wasn't in bad taste at all. I laughed because I thought I saw Batboy. But, I mean, that line and so many of them that were supposed to be edgy just were, I don't know.
That one made me laugh.
You know when the script comes in for a Robin Williams film, do you think there are just blank spaces and it just says Robin does his thing?
Robin riffs.
Donner, party of 50? Donner! Donner, party over here!
I don't know what's wrong here. Something basically, I'm trying to lie to the dials here, but the bottom line is your TV's broken here.
My name is Officer Patio Furniture. I'm here today to talk to you briefly about narcolepsy. Narcolepsy.
Yeah, Robin
I think they
riffs.
Could have easily called Patch Adams Mork from Mork Goes to Medical School. To be
yeah. Yeah.
It really was that.
RR, you know, I mean, you know, well, get out.
Mork was better because he was just the zany Robin Williams. This was the zany and heartfelt Robin Williams.
And he was off of his tits on cocaine at the time, and he had an excuse.
Yes.
And this was trying to elicit, you know, it's trying to tug on your heartstrings.
Oh, yeah.
And be funny at the same time. And dumb. Is it Tom Shadyac? Is that how we're pronouncing it? The director?
Yeah, I think that's how it's pronounced.
Right. Now, so Ace Ventura.
Oh, God.
Nutty Professor. Bruce Almighty. Are we seeing a pattern emerging?
Yes, we are.
Right. The people who are not anywhere near as funny as they think they are being allowed to get away with whatever they want to get away with on
Which,
the film.
You know what else I don't like about Patch Adams? Mark Shaiman did the music. And his music is just—it just seems so formulaic to me.
Oh God! Yeah.
It's like the movie itself. It's perfectly calculated to extract a certain type of emotion for you at one certain cue, and it's not subtle at all.
You know, the scene that stood out to me the most in was the squirrel fight. I don't know if we touched on this, but committing himself to a mental hospital. Because he was suicidal, and I guess at this mental hospital, he has a roommate who is afraid to go to the bathroom for squirrels, he imagines. So Robin Williams decides he's going to help him use pretend guns and fight the pretend squirrels. And this worked out so well, I guess he decided if he can fight off imaginary squirrels, he can be an amazing doctor.
There's one!
At the end of the bed!
Bang!
No.
I don't know where that jump came from.
I think that might actually be a common thing, though. For some people that are in therapy, they think, I've been helped. I can do this to other people. This is what I want
to
do.
Listen to the music and how the violins get all upbeat and happy when he, you know, starts fighting the invisible.
It's almost as if you're not watching the film that the music comes from.
But, I mean, I'll give Shaman and Mark Shaman points because didn't he actually at some point team up with Parker and Stone to do the music for the Bigger, Longer, Uncut?
You may be right about that, but something about him, something about his stuff when he works alone is just seems so saccharine to me. I just can't.
Yeah, that's like giving Shatner points for... you know, kind of sending himself up in later years. It doesn't mean that he wasn't taking himself seriously at one point.
Oh, this is one of the things I thought was really, really amazing. It taught us how we can shortcut the grief process.
Okay.
All you need is a very scenic view.
And a butterfly.
A butterfly.
Oh, yeah.
And you're done. Grief is over.
Should we go
doesn't matter how terrible the circumstances were behind the passing. I mean, that was a horrible, horrible experience we've got to go through.
She gets murdered, right? That was a really weak plot twist.
I mean, well, exactly.
The plot twist where his girlfriend gets murdered was
we've got to take that back a couple of steps, right?
Yes, we do.
This woman hates his fucking guts.
She does.
She couldn't be more opposed to him. And of course,
what's going to happen at that point. Man in his mid-30s in med school hitting on her, I know.
Mid-30s? Early 40s.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a mental patient.
Yeah.
It's at least a 20-year age gap.
And apparently he's still at it.
It's true. I think you're right.
Yeah,
the Gesundheit Hospital is in operation, evidently.
He's still trying to raise money for, like, another building, I think, last I read.
Right. Is the other building going to take the shape of a woman's vagina and two massive legs in stirrups?
I thought that was funny. If he actually did that's funny.
I don't think he actually did that. Do you? Okay, how could that possibly be done? That's what...
Yeah,
even with
and
a massive art
thing,
department of a Hollywood film.
Paper mache.
You're gonna get four tons of paper mache. I mean, and that scene with the fucking balloons. Pardon my language. That made me really mad. He's a poor med school student with no job. How is he gonna get? What was that? 50,000 balloons. I mean, that room was as filled with balloons as that commercial where 10 trillion balls bounce down the street or whatever. I mean,
yes, we had
there
to
be the budget for that.
We had to.
It was all overdone.
Yes, and I thought it was really cool that nurses in a hospital would just allow hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars of medical supplies to be just rolled right out and taken to a free clinic.
Well, he tested the water slowly. He walked around in bedpans and stuff like that to make kids laugh first, and then he
hilarious.
They
that
don't
was.
Care about this stuff. I'll steal it.
Well, here's the thing, right? Go back to that. Dr. P, you mentioned that scene when he first goes into the kids' ward and puts on his red nose.
Right.
To the poor girl. Mm-hmm. Now, remember when you were a kid, right?
Okay.
Everyone talks about how, some people are scared of clowns and stuff like that.
Oh, no kidding. I was terrified still.
I fall into that category as well, but it's not so much being scared of the clown as thinking, well, that's a dude dressed up like that. What? That's weird. There's something wrong with that fella that he wants to do this, right? And when I was at school, and this is a true story, when I was in infant school, kindergarten, as you would call it, I guess, there was a dude whose house backed onto the school playground. It was a big high wall, and he just one day come up there with a puppet show, doing a puppet show, blimey, I could have only been about 5 or 6, and it made me uneasy. Made me uneasy, and I saw the dinner ladies running around, and the police were called. and that is what would happen if Patch Adams went about his business near some children. He would be arrested and put on a register. I'm pretty about
a
that.
Register
in this country. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. In your like country, you'd have to go and knock on people's doors and tell them he'd moved in to the neighborhood.
Have we pretty much covered Patch Adams?
Not really.
Okay, not entirely, because we haven't covered the famous scene where he gets the old woman to eat by putting her in a kiddie pool full of spaghetti.
Oh. Yeah,
I'm glad you brought that up, Casey, because that is the rapping granny.
The wedding singer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I wish he'd started rapping in this film.
She's fucking 80 something. Hasn't she had enough limp noodles as it is?
No, if she'd started rapping in this, it would have made it a better film. And she would have invented hip hop, because this was 1971.
Yeah,
they should have played like We Are the World over this. You know, because if Al Qaeda were pissed off.
I think this is the first time Patch Adams and Al Qaeda has ever been mentioned in the same sentence.
Well, when the VHS finally makes it over to Pakistan and they put it in their video machine, they're going to be well pissed off. There's an old woman swimming in noodles. A debauched society we live in the West.
There was not much that saved this film. There really wasn't. There were very few surprises, and even like the plot turn with the girlfriend being murdered wasn't.
But that was done away with in 7 minutes flat.
Yes.
She fell in love with him. She said she'd been abused as a child or whatever, molested as a young adult. And 2 minutes later, she was killed by a very kind of.
I'm fine.
And this house, it's amazing. Is it yours?
It's my father's. He left it to me.
I really can't stay very long. I just wanted to see how you were doing.
Yeah, you're right. And we don't want to be late.
Crap.
A nut.
Actor.
A disturbed individual.
Well, bad actor. Oh, that's it.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, did they have to play that up so much that he was a nutcase? Yeah. It's like picking at his lips and scratching his ass or whatever he was doing.
Oh, God. Who couldn't see it coming?
Exactly. And then she's gone. So what is the message there to, you know, women who have been molested? Just keep it to yourself.
You'll get yours. Yeah,
I think the message to women who have been molested is basically, you're right to not trust anyone.
Yeah, it's common.
Otherwise, Patch Adams will send you into a literal shotgun shack with a nutcase. I don't know how long we've got, but if we've got 3 or 4 hours, I'd like to talk about his trousers. In this film. Because did anyone else notice this? I said something about it on Twitter last night. The costume department chose to put Patch / Robin Williams, and I think Robin Williams probably had more to do with this than Patch, in combat kind of action slacks. The only way I could say it. I mean, was anyone wearing combat trousers back in the 70s? Maybe if you come back from Vietnam and kept them. These were like whatever crazy shirt, you know, he was out doing Nelson Mandela for his crazy shirts, wasn't he? So he was wearing those, and whatever pants he had on would match them in colour in some way, right? But they would all be massively baggy and have the combat pockets in. I can only think that this was made in 98. Right, 98. This was happening in fashion back then, combat trousers. You go into a store and buy them. I can only think that Robin Williams, putting on a little bit of weight, thought, yeah, this is for me. I'm going to wear baggy shirts and combat pants. And I've got a little bit of pull now. So when it comes to what I'm going to wear in this movie, every single pair of trousers he wears are exactly the same, apart from the colour. Have a look. Wearing a red shirt, it's got a red pair of velvet combat pants on.
Robin Williams is one of the only big-name actors I've ever seen in person just on the street. He was in downtown Asheville
Did you punch him in the face?
No, but he walked.
Good, because you would have broke your hand on that nose and that chin.
He walked out of a cigar store, Bonnie's Little Corner in downtown Asheville, and I kind of froze and just kept walking back in. And Carlos, the guy who works there, was like, "That was Robin Williams." And I was like, "Yeah." "You didn't ask for his autograph." "Oh, what the fuck am I going to say to Robin Williams?"
If I'm going to be completely and totally honest, Robin Williams was probably one of the most influential people in my young life.
Well, luckily for you, it doesn't show anymore.
I can honestly say that he was probably my introduction to stand-up comedy. The whole notion of people just sort of standing up on stage and telling jokes and making people laugh as opposed to just being in a movie or something like that. That was probably the first time I saw somebody doing that was Robin Williams.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think I could probably say that's the same for me as well when Eddie Murphy and Steve Martin. But that doesn't mean that they were necessarily that great.
Yeah. I'll throw another Williams movie out at you. You get two powerhouses coming together and coming up with a colossal failure. What about Jack?
Oh.
Yeah. Well, it's a shame about Coppola.
Personally, I think that is worse than Patch Adams.
Yeah, Cosby in that, too.
I thought deep down, I was like, Jack could be the dark horse in this and win it when I saw the list that Booz had posted, because I think it's worse than Patch Adams. Jack is terrible.
I haven't seen it, never seen it, because I didn't want to see any of these films because I knew they were going to be crap.
And Coppola has made like four of the greatest films of all time.
Yeah, a long time ago, though.
It makes me wonder what the hell motivated him to make Jack.
Well, he wanted to be a director for hire for that. That was it.
I just don't get that. I mean,
I think that he was trying to do, that was sort of his attempt at doing an indie comedy or an indie quirky comedy along the veins. He was hoping to get something like maybe Little Miss Sunshine, but he wound up getting what he got. That was, right at the sort of when the tide was starting to turn and, little independent movies were becoming cool. And, they proved that they could be marketable, I think, to a mass audience. And he said, I can do this. People like me. And, I had a big, long hiatus. And
wow.
Let's get a couple of people who are big names and throw them into a movie that they wouldn't otherwise be in. Bill Cosby, let's face it, doesn't make many movies.
You need to get closer to the mic, P.
Okay.
God damn it. What is going on? You need to strap that thing to your head. Who'd you buy that one? One off the Buddhists?
It's the same one.
Dr. P always buys his headsets from some religious sect for some reason.
I keep getting them from shady places. No, I was in a hurry the night before a podcast a while back. My headset had died. And on my way into town, I'm thinking I will see a computer store somewhere. And there it was, Computers for Christ. And I buy this headset, which first off didn't even have a USB connection. It was a series of wires that plugged into the back of the tower. So that was a pain to begin with. But it was horrible. I paid like $70 for it, and it crackled. And they could barely hear me. And
Have you covered all the movies on the list, though? Or do you want to,
Not exactly, but I do like World's Greatest Dad. I have to say that.
I'll defend that one, too. I thought that had a lot of heart.
And I thought The Night Listener was okay.
Oh, you saw
it
that?
It wasn't terrible. Yeah, I saw it a long time ago, and I've only seen it once, but I do remember seeing it.
The interesting thing about that is that it shares a lot with Catfish.
Yeah.
And it was probably made before Catfish.
Yeah, it was.
And it's definitely more believable than Catfish, even though it's a work of fiction.
I would agree to that, too. There's a lot of that film stitched. But I'll also throw in quickly Father's Day, which I think was a bit of a misfire, and I don't think that was anybody's fault. Because there wasn't anything that you could do combining Billy Crystal and Robin Williams. I mean, everybody had hoped to get these two guys together in a movie for years. They put them in... Quite frankly, I don't think that French comedy should be made as American movies anyway. I think that there's a lot of...
That's what I mean about old dogs, Casey, because that seems... If you think about, the Woman in Red, All these French films that have been remade.
If you have a favorite, what's your favorite Robin Williams film?
Good Morning Vietnam.
Fisher King.
Fisher King. Jesus, never mind. Fisher King.
Okay.
I'll take Awakenings. I still keep going back to that one once in a while.
That's right. And you know what? I'm going to say it.
I was trying to get pride out of you earlier. Now I know why you wouldn't.
Oh, man.
We got to make a guess here.
Well, you've talked about Garp. Is it Garp?
No, it's not Garp.
What about Dead Poets?
I saw that when I was 15 years old, and it was the perfect age to see it, and it affected me so much that nostalgia for it has carried over year after year after year after year.
I'm just older enough than you that I thought, oh, this is gay when I saw it. And so it didn't have that impact if I'd have been about 3 or 4 years younger.
I remember there was a $1.50 movie theater, and a friend of mine during the summer, he's like, let's go to the $1.50 theater and see a movie. And I was like, well, you know, I've really heard great things about Dead Poets Society. He's like, nah, man, let's go see House Party.
Oh, which is
it Bernie Mac you were friends with?
No, but he said, nah, man, let's go see House Party. I was like, all right. And I saw House Party instead of Dead Poets Society
in
a theater.
I never saw Dead Poets Society and got moved in that way.
I didn't see Dead Poets Society until my mom and stepdad rented it like months later. Mm-hmm. I could have seen it in like at least a theater.
So what age were you, Blasco?
15 when I saw it.
See, that's it. 14,
that's
15,
the perfect
60.
Age to see that movie.
I think you're right. Yeah, maybe.
I would agree with you. Yeah.
That's why Angel Heart is still one of my favorite films, even though, you know, I know that Louis Cypher, pretty obvious, right?
Lisa Bonet did it for you, didn't she?
Well, she definitely did, mate. Definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Absolutely. But yeah, I know there's things wrong with that film, but I still stand by it. I'm standing on the table now, actually.
There we go. Yeah. And, you know, Patch Adams followed the Dead Poets Society formula. When everybody put on those noses at the end of the movie, that was totally Dead Poets.
Oh, Captain, my Captain. I'm sorry.
Oh, my God. Before we go, Casey, I want to make sure you get your plug in for your show and stuff before we go.
Sure. Thanks a lot. So my name's Casey Ryan. You can listen to me usually live on Sundays at noon on TalkShoe. That's the word talk and the word shoe, .com. And then just go into the search bar there and look for Cutting Room Floor. Or you can follow me on Twitter at Cutting Room MRB.
Thank you so much for participating. I know we went over time, and I'm sorry about that. But
this has been a lot of fun. Thanks a lot. Awesome. You guys are doing good. You guys are doing good work. You're a riot. Believe me.
Thank you, Casey. Thank you, Casey.
Wanted to do a few shout-outs to the people that voted on Twitter. We Tiger 3 went for Bicentennial Man. About 12 Minutes went for Popeye, but he actually liked Smoochie. David Maltz, he mentioned Old Dogs, and that weren't on our vote.
But that's right.
We watched it anyway, David, just for you.
Yeah, God, that was bad.
And we want to kill you now. Jenny Shrinks deserves a special mention because she was the one that tried to organize the late rally for What Dreams May Come.
I would not have watched that had it not been for her.
No, but neither of us would. But there was a point at which we thought, shit, we might have to watch this film. So we did.
Yeah.
Luckily, it didn't work, but we still watched it anyway. So thanks a lot for that, Jenny.
Yeah, thanks.
And the people that actually voted for Patch, well, we had Jim Napier from GeekTyrant.com. Big Mackie, that's Mackie from the Banffcast, the Bad Movie Fiends podcast.
That's and another one to stop following.
They would know.
No. Well, look, I mean, Jesus Christ. Justin Kelly, those guys go further than that. So
true. We're not going to stop following you.
And also who voted for Patch. And for some further reading, if you need it, for your Robin Williams podcast fun, is the lads from Yeah, It's That Bad. Yeah, It's That Bad podcast. They voted for Patch, and they did a podcast about Bicentennial Man a couple of weeks ago. So check that out. And they actually quite liked it, I think.
they liked Bicentennial Man?
Well, they liked it more than we did, and we liked it more than most of the shit we wrote.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So, thanks to everyone who voted on Twitter, and thanks to everyone who voted on sfj.com. Yeah.
And that will do it for this episode of the SweetFeatheryJesus.com podcast. I'd like to thank my co-hosts, Booze and Dr. P, for helping me out once again with the show. I'd also like to thank Casey Ryan from the Cutting Room Floor podcast. You can hear more from Casey just by going to TalkShoe.com and looking for his podcast called The Cutting Room Floor. I highly recommend it. Booze and I are regular listeners ourselves. And if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me, Belasco@sweetfeatheryjesus.com. You can follow us on Twitter, that's sfj.com, that's sfjdotcom. And you can be our friend on Facebook, that's facebook.com/sweetfeatheryjesus. Thank you once again for joining us, and thank you again, Casey Ryan from the Cutting Room Floor podcast. We'll see you next time. Closer to the mic, P.